Princess Catherine, Lady Gertrude, and Sir Jasper made their way back through the trees to the carriage. Catherine and Gertrude stuck to the trail, such as it was, while Sir Jasper just ambled along, walking through anything that got in his way. He even drifted through some of the larger trees, because he was so busy looking eagerly around him that he genuinely didn't see them coming. Apparently, he'd been in the graveyard so long, he'd forgotten what everything else looked like. Moths loved Sir Jasper. They came fluttering from everywhere at once to fly around him. Perhaps they liked his gentle glow. Either way, Sir Jasper was charmed by them and even tried putting out a hand for them to land on, but they just dropped right through it. Eventually, they all flew away at once, and Sir Jasper watched them go wistfully till they were out of sight. When the three of them finally emerged from the trees and approached the carriage, the somber warrior turned around sharply and stopped what he was doing to take a good look at the ghost. Sir Jasper studied the huge warrior in his featureless steel helm with great interest.
Is there anything in there?
Yes.
The somber warrior turned to Catherine.
Who is this, Your Highness? And why can I see through him?
Sorry, I go all transparent when I get nervous. At least I don't leak ectoplasm anymore. Hello, I'm Sir Jasper. I'm a ghost. Why haven't you got a face?
Lost it in a poker game.
Oh, that's terrible and very unlucky.
I'll say. I wouldn't have minded, but the other man only had two pair.
If you two have quite finished trying to weird me out, Sir Jasper is with me.
He's your pet, Your Highness. Keep him on a short leash. We're ready to leave when you are.
Really?
The somber warrior had already turned his back on all of them to look the carriage over and make sure everything was as it should be.
I'm not a pet. I'm an aristocrat, or at least I'm pretty sure I used to be.
Catherine looked at Lady Gertrude.
I'm sure you have all kinds of objections as to why I can't take Sir Jasper with us to the Forest Castle. Let us take it for granted that I have listened to them all carefully, and then dismissed them out of hand, because I'm royal and I can do that. He's going with us. I've got to get some fun out of this situation, and Sir Jasper should shake up the Forest Court nicely.
Can I just ask? Neither of you seem particularly bothered by the fact that I'm dead but not departed. Why is that?
Castle Midnight was famous for its many ghosts back in the day, but they'd all disappeared by the time I came along. I read all the stories, listened to all the songs, including the really old ones you used to sing to me when I was still small, Lady Gertrude. And as soon as I was old enough to get out on my own, I used to go wandering through all the dark corridors in the early hours of the morning, searching for ghosts and spirits and anything that looked like it might go bump in the night, if you prodded it hard enough.
That's right, you did, my little poppet. Just a small slip of a thing, and you already knew your own mind. You never found anything, but it didn't stop you looking. We had to lock you in your bedroom at night, just to make sure you got your proper sleep. Oh, the kicking you used to give that door!
I spent a lot of time confined in my rooms as a child, for one misdemeanor or another, until I got old enough to charm one of my guards into teaching me how to pick a lock. After that, there was no stopping me. I've always had problems with authority figures, even though I am one. Or at least I used to be. If I had any real power, I wouldn't be here, on my way to an arranged marriage with a man I haven't even met. I just know he's going to be short, and fat, and probably eats biscuits in bed.
Later that night, in another clearing, somewhat closer to the Forest Castle, Hawk, Fisher, Jack, and Jillian all sat around a blazing campfire, catching up on family life. The dragon had hoped to make the castle before nightfall, but even though he was feeling fresh and young again, the forest land was a lot bigger than he remembered, and he couldn't be sure of getting there before darkness fell. The moon seemed a lot larger in the sky overhead, and the stars shone fiercely in the night, as though they were watching. Chappie gnawed at a bone while the dragon lay curled around everyone, putting his huge green body between them and the shadows beyond the firelight.
Why did you never want to meet your grandchildren?
It seemed for the best. We made a decision, your mother and I, after you and Jillian wrote to us saying you had children of your own. We decided it was better to have no contact at all with Mercy and Nathaniel. For their sakes.
We thought it advisable to maintain a safe distance, to keep from overshadowing their lives. You had it hard enough when we were just thought of as heroes. By the time Mercy and Nathaniel came along, we were myths and legends. We wanted them to have their own lives.
I managed, and Jack too.
Did you? You went all the way down to Haven to live the lives we lived, and Jack had to become the walking man to make his mark.
That's not why I did it.
We saw what we did to you, and we were determined not to let anything like that happen to our grandchildren.
So we stayed away.
You always were too honorable for your own good.
Oh, look who's talking!
And as long as no one knew they were our grandchildren, no one could ever use them as weapons against us, or vice versa.
So, all for their own good. Nothing at all to do with you needing to hide your true identities from the world.
Oh, that too. We've always been able to be practical when we have to. We did try to keep an eye on them, and on you, from a safe distance. But it's a lot harder to get your hands on reliable magics these days.
And that's why I didn't hear from you for decades?
There is such a thing as letters.
Letters can be intercepted.
We had to turn our backs on our old lives to have new lives. Rupert and Julia are part of myth and legend now. Let them stay that way.
People would only be upset and disappointed if they met the real thing.
I don't know. They're still talking about Captains Hawk and Fisher in Haven.
It's not like you needed us. You've lived successful lives of your own.
Oh, children always need their parents.
I don't suppose you missed me?
No.
Not in the least.
Oh.
I can't believe you're still alive, dog. You were old when I was just a kid, and now look at you.
Distinguished is the word you're looking for. I'm older than the both of you put together, and that's in dog years. The High Warlock did good work.
Jack, what happened to your wife, Amelia?
She left me after I became the walking man. I don't blame her. I was very caught up in myself for some time there. Afterwards, after I'd given it all up, I did try to find her, if only to tell her she'd been right all along. But she'd put a lot of time and effort into disappearing. She didn't want to be found. So I went to the Abbey of St. Augustine. A lot of people who knew both of us knew where I was. She could have found me if she'd wanted to. I hope she's still out there, somewhere. I hope she's happy.
Your daughter might know.
Jack shrugged. It was his turn to stare into the fire rather than face his parents.
Mercy might know any number of things. I never asked. I didn't want her to have to choose which parent to be true to.
And Matthew?
He died some time back.
Oh, Jack, I'm so sorry.
I'm not.
Don't ask me where or even who Nathaniel's father might be. Could have been any one of a dozen men. I never cared enough to find out. I always was generous with my affections.
She didn't get that from me.
Don't start.
So, is it true, Mother? Is it true what they say in some of the songs? That you slept with Uncle Harold before you got together with Dad? That is so icky.
See what you've started? It was during the war, Jillian. We were all in a dark place. I thought I'd lost your father. Things happen.
This is me changing the subject. What exactly did the Demon Prince say to you about the threat to your grandchildren?
He didn't actually say much.
He said our grandchildren would die if your father and I didn't return to the forest land.
The Demon Prince, the embodiment of evil in the living world. It's hard to think of such an awful thing being real.
I'm not sure that's the right word to apply to him. He's both more and less than real, as we understand the word. He comes from another dimension called Reverie, where the blue moon shines forever.
Jillian's shudder was not due to the cold night.
You went there, didn't you? You left this world to walk in a whole other reality. What was it like?
Strange. Horrible. Magnificent. I don't think we have the right words or even the concepts in our language to describe it.
And you were there. Damn. My parents really were legends.
We were only ever just people, doing what was needed.
As the walking man, you were a legend, Jack.
Not on your scale. I saved souls. You saved the world. Twice.
Ach, it's an overrated thing being a legend. I've known more than a few heroes in my time, and most of them were a few shillings short of a pound, if you know what I mean.
Jillian turned to look at the dragon, whose head lay on the grass opposite her.
Dragon, you knew both of our parents back when they were young. What were they really like? Prince Rupert and Princess Julia.
Pains in the arse, mostly. And brave and honorable. Throwing themselves against evil because there was no one else. And because they would not turn away. They shone so very brightly in the dark. I always felt honored that they made me part of their adventure. Even if they did drag me out of my nice, comfortable cave and away from my collection of butterflies.
I remember. You were there with us at the end. Facing the demon prince in his place of power, the darkest part of the Darkwood. He struck you down and would have beaten you to death. I still remember him kicking you in the face and your golden blood falling. I never felt so ashamed in my life for leading you into that.
Hush, Julia. You never asked me to do anything I wasn't willing to do. What did happen to my butterfly collection?
Locked away in the vaults of the Millennium Oak. Still in the same display cases you made for them.
Hold it. He's not kidding. He collected butterflies, not gold.
The dragon lifted his great head a few feet off the ground to stare at Jack.
They're just as pretty, aren't they?
Try not to upset the 30-foot dragon, son. He's a bit sensitive about some things.
Hey, don't upset him, or he might tell you what kind of meat you've been eating tonight.
They all looked at one another, and then at what little remained of the haunch of meat the dragon had provided for their supper. They didn't say anything. The dragon lowered his head to the grass again.
I still don't see why the demon prince chose right now to interfere in our world again. Has anything significant happened recently? It's easy to get out of touch when you're living the secluded life in a monastery.
There are rumors of war. And I mean real rumors of actual armed conflict between the Forestland and the Kingdom of Redheart. Recruitment at the sorting houses has been going through the roof in the last few years. Young men and women just desperate to train as warriors just to be ready when it all kicks off. But I would have said the chances of war were actually lower now, with a peace agreement on the table and an arranged royal marriage in the cards between Prince Richard of the Forest and Princess Catherine of Redheart.
Our great-great-nephew is getting married. We have to be there for the ceremony.
How can we? They won't let us in as Hawk and Fisher, but we can't show up at the Forest Court as Rupert and Julia. That could throw the whole line of succession into disarray.
There can't be anyone left alive who'd recognize us as Rupert and Julia. Not after all these years. So we turn up as the Hawk and Fisher, currently in charge of the Hero Academy. They'd be bound to let them in. The Confucianum will keep anyone from asking too many questions.
Is that thing still with us?
Who can say?
Excuse me, but what the hell is the Confucianum? I thought I had a good grounding in strange and exotic magical devices, but that's not a name
Just something we picked up on our travels. It exists to confuse the issue. Any issue. Including what kind of a device it is.
Might be a device, might be alive. Might be something beyond our limited human comprehension. But we've always gotten along fine with it.
Can I see it?
If it wanted you to see it, you'd be seeing it.
I think it's just shy around strangers sometimes.
You always were weird, even when we were kids.
I always sort of liked that.
I am not going to the Forest Castle as anyone but myself. I've got nothing to hide. I'm proud of my reputation, even if it does make some people uncomfortable.
Same here. We'd be expected to turn up anyway, as relatives of the groom. I suppose we better get some presents.
Did you get an invitation? No, neither did I. Funny about that. I say we go just to embarrass them.
Oh, hear, hear! Always lots of good food and drink at a wedding. I love cake.
If what we saw genuinely was the Demon Prince, and not just some sorcerer messing with our heads, if it really is him, we're going to need the old weapons.
The rainbow sword is still in the castle armory.
Hold it. That's real? I thought it was just a metaphor.
Grow up, Jack.
The rainbow is real, too. And if we need more weapons, the three missing infernal devices should still be hidden inside the no longer inverted cathedral. We better check to see that they're still there.
There are three more infernal devices? Three more of those cursed, powerful swords? That's not in any of the songs or stories.
Hardly surprising. Is there anything else we should be concerned about?
They never did find the jewel of compulsion that used to be set in the hilt of the sword Kirtana before the demon prince destroyed the sword at the end. The Crimson Pursuant could confuse any mind, bend any will, control anyone, and it may still be out there, somewhere.
You are really freaking me out now.
The past is never really over, and bad things just keep turning up again and again.
You had to spend 20 years in seclusion in a monastery to work that out?
Play nicely, children, or there'll be no dessert.
Dessert? Here's dessert! Somebody definitely mentioned dessert.
When we get to the castle, is there anyone in that place we can be honest with about who we really are and why we're there? Anyone we can trust?
The demon prince said he lives inside people now, which means he could be anybody. So no, we can't trust anyone.
Situation entirely normal, then.
Hawk and Fisher both stopped and looked at their children for a long moment.
You do understand why we never took you to the castle as children, even for just a visit? It is your family home by right, but still we...
You wouldn't have liked it anyway. I never did.
The castle has a lot of bad memories for your father, and I can't say I was ever that fond of it.
It is your inheritance, I suppose. You are attached to the royal line, though you'd probably have a hard time proving it.
Trust us on this one. You don't want to be royal. It isn't nearly as much fun as the songs and stories make out.
Right.
But you could still be king. You're the oldest member of the line, the surviving son of King John, which gives you precedence. You could take the throne and lead the war against the demon prince.
I never wanted the throne. Never.
Your father could have been king instead of Harold. There were many who would have supported such a claim. That's why we left in such a hurry. Because he chose to be with me.
They held hands. Jack and Jillian felt their hearts jump. Their legendary love.
Besides, it's a constitutional monarchy these days, which makes it all moot. Whatever moot is, it sounds kind of chewy, don't it?
Jack, did you ever go to Forest Castle when you were the walking man?
Yes. How about you?
Yes. I wanted to see where it all began. Your old home, Dad.
Can't say it ever felt like home to me. The castle isn't the kind of place anyone would call home. And my relationship with your grandfather, King John, was always complicated.
You never talked much about him, even when we were kids.
Nothing much to say. He did his best, I suppose, under difficult circumstances. We reconciled pretty much at the end.
Is it true that he's still out there, somewhere in the land? There are a few songs that say he's with the Lady of the Lake.
Who knows?
I would like to see what Nathaniel is up to that keeps him too busy to write to his mother regularly.
I was thinking the same thing about Mercy.
There are bound to be some at the castle capable of detecting my presence. So it's probably best if I drop you all off some distance away. I'll be around, keeping an eye on you and on things generally.
You don't think they'd be pleased to see a live dragon after all these years?
No one is ever pleased to see a dragon. That's part of the fun of being a dragon. We'll set off first thing in the morning.
If this is all so urgent, why can't we go now?
Because it's night. I don't see well in the dark. I once flew into the side of a hill I didn't see coming.
But why is...
Hawk placed a hand on her arm.
Don't.
It was only then that Jillian remembered that the dragon had been in the dark wood, too. They settled down for the night. Hawk and Fisher sat close together, wrapped in the same blanket. Even after all the years and all the things they'd done in their long lives, they still needed a banked fire before they could sleep. Jack and Jillian noticed and glanced at each other and said nothing. When they were small children, it was their parents, not they, who had to have a light burning while they slept. Jack and Jillian, both in their 70s now, looked across the fire at the two young people sitting opposite them, as though they'd never seen them before. Not as Hawk and Fisher, heroes and warriors in their own right, but as Prince Rupert and Princess Julia, myths and legends. Their parents, who'd stayed young while Jack and Jillian grew old. They'd both made good lives for themselves, accomplished great things, but nothing to match their parents. Chappie got up and circled around and around before settling down beside the fire.
Over 100 years old, and I'm still doing this. Does anybody know why?
Because you're a nuisance. We'll take the first watch. You kids get some sleep.
Wake us at first light, and we'll take over so you can get some rest.
Hawk and Fisher talked quietly while their children slipped into sleep. They looked at them fondly, then glanced at the dragon, who closed his great glowing eyes and dozed. Two thin plumes of smoke rose straight up from his nostrils.
Never thought we'd ever see the forest again. Never mind the castle, I never wanted to. When I rode out with you, I never meant to go back again. I wonder how much things will have changed.
The castle we're going back to and the one you remember are 100 years apart.
I don't know if I can do this. It was hard enough going back the last time to investigate Harold's murder. I'm afraid the castle will still have a hold on me, and that I won't be able to leave again.
I know. We'll just have to watch each other's backs, as always, and fight off whatever the place throws at us.
Do you really think we can defeat the Demon Prince a third time?
This time, we outnumber him. There's us, the children, the grandchildren, the dog, and the dragon. All the family. Together again for the first time. Who'd bet against us?
Yeah. Poor demon bastard won't stand a chance.
And then they both sat up straight as something moved in the dark beyond the farthest reaches of the firelight. Jack and Jillian struggled to their feet, blinking and looking around, still half asleep. Old bodies take longer to catch up with warrior instincts. Hawk had his axe at the ready, Fisher had her sword. Jack grasped his wooden staff firmly, and Jillian swept her sword back and forth before her. For two people in their 70s, they both looked very competent and extremely dangerous. Chappie was up on his feet as well. The dragon lifted his great head.
Something's out there. I can't see it, but I can feel it.
What is it? What did you see?
I didn't see anything, but we heard something. Out there, in the dark.
Could it be a demon?
They're pretty rare these days.
And we're a long way from what's left of the Dark Horde.
It's not a demon. It smells dead.
It's him. I know that presence.
The dark earth right at the edge of the firelight blew apart. And out of the dirt, out of the hole, out of the dark of the earth, something rose up into the light. It stood right at the edge of the firelight, so they could see it clearly. A skeleton. Its bones yellowed with age and a long time in the ground. Just bones. Not even a hint of meat or gristle to hold them together. Standing erect, it moved jerkily, as though having difficulty remembering what movement was. The skull turned slowly to look at the living, with its dark, empty eye sockets and bared teeth.
I told you. I live inside people now. The living or the dead. I don't discriminate. Sometimes they know I'm there, and sometimes I don't let them know. Depending on which choice will hurt them more.
Get out! Leave those mortal remains!
Jack's body was trembling as he faced the demon.
In the name of the god I serve, I command you to depart!
You gave up any authority you might have had over me when you put down the burden of being the walking man. Was it my voice that whispered in your ear then, persuading you that you didn't need to be God's errand boy anymore? Or were you just not worthy?
Leave him alone!
Jillian took a step forward. The skull turned immediately to look at her, and she stopped where she was.
You see, little Jillian? I came back after all. Just as I said I would when I hid in the shadows at the foot of your bed, when you were so small and vulnerable. You'll always be frightened of me, little Jillian, until I finally return for you.
Hawk and Fisher stepped forward then, putting themselves between the Demon Prince and their children, sword and axe at the ready. The skull grinned at both of them.
Come to me, Rupert. Julia. Bring your spawn and your pets. I'm waiting for you. One last time pays for all.
Hawk's hand whipped forward and his axe flashed through the air to split the skull in two. The whole head was torn away from the skeleton body, which collapsed immediately in a tangle of bones. Everyone rushed forward, but the Demon Prince was gone, leaving only death behind. Jillian kicked the bones apart, scattering them, and then took control of herself and stood very still, breathing hard. Jack put a hand on her shoulder.
He knows we've come back.
He always did.
Would any of you mind if I took one of these bones?
The Princess Catherine and her entourage arrived at Forest Castle later that evening. The royal carriage paused at the edge of the moat, with the princess, Lady Gertrude, and Sir Jasper inside it, and the somber warrior out in front on his great black charger. The six soldiers surrounded the carriage, sticking close and keeping their eyes open. The driver was back in his place. The somber warrior had tracked him down after he ran away, and drove him back with harsh language and entirely convincing threats. They'd made good time and arrived with almost an hour of daylight to spare, only to find that the drawbridge wasn't down, so they had no way of crossing the moat. Everyone took a good look at the forest castle. Catherine and Gertrude leaned halfway out of the open windows of the carriage, while Sir Jasper just stood up and stuck his head through the carriage roof. And for a while, none of them said anything.
I didn't know. I didn't realize. I had no idea. It's so big. Much bigger than Castle Midnight.
This isn't a castle. This is a town in its own right. Maybe even a city. The outer walls go on for miles, and look at all the towers and stonework, and we should have been told. We should have been warned.
Buck up. You can't afford to show weakness in the face of the enemy, especially if you're marrying one of them. Size isn't everything. Look at the state of the outer wall, cracked and pitted with stone, moss and ivy everywhere.
Yes, my father would never let Castle Midnight get into such a state.
And one day, all of this will be yours. Maybe you could have it painted a more pleasant color.
Sir Jasper sank back down into the carriage and hovered just above the seat next to Catherine. He looked thoughtful. Catherine pulled her head back in the window, started to say something, and then looked at the ghost.
Are you remembering something, Sir Jasper?
Perhaps. I think. No, I'm sure. I've been here before, when I was still alive.
I suppose you must have, if you really were a knight of the realm. A knight serves his king.
Yes. Which king? How long have I been gone?
Hello, the keep! Open the gate for Princess Catherine of Redheart!
The somber warrior attracted the attention of a lone guard, who looked down from the lofty height, recognized the royal crest of Redheart on the side of the carriage, and in a panic disappeared from the crenellated battlements. Sir Jasper walked through the side of the carriage and strode out across the moat. His feet made no impression on the surface of the water, not even a single ripple. He stopped abruptly halfway across and peered down into the dark and murky waters. Catherine popped her head out the window again.
Is there anything living in the moat, guarding the castle? I seem to recall reading something about crocodiles.
I don't see anything, just a few pike and carp, hardly big enough to be worth getting your rod out.
While he was still speaking, the huge drawbridge came crashing down. It hit Sir Jasper right on the top of his gently glowing head without harming him in the least. It passed right through his body. Sir Jasper stood there confused but unaffected, on top of the drawbridge. The Forest Castle Seneschal came hurrying forward, with as many people as he'd been able to gather together on such short notice, to form a guard of honor. Sir Jasper took one look at all the people running straight at him, disappeared immediately, and reappeared back at the carriage. Catherine and Gertrude were already getting out, so he went and hid behind them. The Seneschal crashed to a halt at the very edge of the drawbridge.
Profuse apologies. We only received word you'd arrived in the forest a few hours ago. We did send an honor guard to meet you and escort you safely here, but since we only had a rough idea of where you were, it would appear we missed each other. King Rufus and Prince Richard are on their way, I'm sure. Do come in, please. We have been expecting you, all appearances to the contrary. Your rooms are prepared.
So they all went inside. The Seneschal led the way, with Princess Catherine and Lady Gertrude strolling regally along on either side of him. Sir Jasper brought up the rear, staring at everything with great interest. The Seneschal had shot several looks in his direction, but wasn't feeling confident enough to ask any questions as yet. The somber warrior swung down from his great horse and walked behind them, followed by the royal carriage and the six soldiers. Seneschal led the way into the castle's entrance hall, looked quickly about him, saw there was still no sign of the king or the prince, and thought quickly. He bowed formally to the princess again.
Princess Catherine, Lady Gertrude, would you mind awfully just waiting here in this reception chamber for just a few moments while I go and see what's keeping everyone?
Catherine gave him her best regal nod, and the Seneschal practically broke in two from bowing repeatedly as he led them to a side door. The room he showed them into clearly wasn't a formal reception chamber, just a side room, but it seemed comfortable enough, so no one said anything. Catherine and Gertrude and Sir Jasper looked about them in an ostentatiously unimpressed way, and the Seneschal quickly bowed and hurried off. Catherine stood in the center of the room, arms folded, not deigning to sit. The room was actually quite a bit larger than she was used to. In Castle Midnight, it would have passed for a suite all on its own. It did seem comfortable enough, though all the fittings and furnishings were very old-fashioned to her taste. The portraits on the walls were in a whole mixture of clashing styles, from the painfully realistic to the exceedingly stylized, and Catherine scowled as she was reminded of the stylized portrait of Prince Richard that she'd been shown before. She still had no idea of what the man really looked like. It occurred to her that she was finally about to meet the man she'd come all this way to marry, and a cold chill settled in her stomach. She wanted to just leave, walk out, and go home. But she knew she couldn't. No way back, no way out.
Oh, Prince Richard had better turn up soon. But I'm warning you, if he's got a single wart, or is even slightly hunchbacked, this marriage is off.
You can be very trying sometimes, my pet. Of course he hasn't got any of those things.
You haven't met him. He might have.
I would have been told.
You mean we would have been told?
Of course, my poppet.
They didn't know Richard was watching them through the half-open door. Richard had had an idea. They would have trampled all over one another in their rush to talk him out of it, whatever it was. Which is why he hadn't told any of them. He was determined not to be talked out of it. Richard had dressed himself up as a servant, in particularly scruffy and even unclean clothing, and topped it off with a marvelously ratty false beard. His idea was that if Catherine was met by a rude enough servant, her pride would be outraged, and she would take umbrage and stalk out of the castle and insist on being taken home again. And then the marriage would be off, and no one could put any blame on him. The prince was very fond of romantic adventure novels, in which this kind of thing happened all the time. He paused a moment to practice his slouch in front of a handy mirror. He looked awful. He dropped his reflection a sly wink. And then the prince swaggered into the room.
Hello, who might you be?
I am Catherine of Redheart, and this is my companion, Lady Gertrude.
We all have our troubles. Who's the gentleman in the nighty?
Don't mind him, he's a ghost.
Richard looked sharply at Sir Jasper, who smiled affably back.
Well, I don't know about this. No one said anything to me. I can't let you just go wandering about the castle. You could be anyone. Do you have any form of identification?
I am expected.
Oh, they all say that. I'll have to see some proof of who you claim to be. Can you show me a birthmark? Scars? How about a tattoo?
This is intolerable! I travel all this way to get here, and now they don't want to let me in? That's it! The marriage is off! I will not be talked to like this! Come, Lady Gertrude, we shall return to our carriage and show our backs to this whole sorry excuse for a kingdom.
No, no, my sweet, my poppet, my princess.
Gertrude placed herself bodily between Catherine and the door.
You can't judge a castle by one rude servant. Remember how important this marriage is.
Catherine glowered at the disguised prince, who was now chewing at his false beard and scratching himself in an unpleasant way.
All right, I'll stay. For honor and duty and all that stuff. But no more nonsense about identification.
Of course, my poppet. You, fellow, here is the official invitation from King Rufus, approved by your House of Parliament, calling us to the Forest Castle for the royal wedding.
Richard took the heavy parchment that Lady Gertrude had produced from somewhere on her person, unfolded it, glanced at all the many official phrases and the attached crimson wax seals, and tossed it casually over his shoulder.
Seems to be in order. You'll have to register, though.
He took down a large volume from the bookshelves and opened it.
Nasty cold you've got there.
Let me at him. I'll brain him.
Gertrude grabbed her firmly by the arm.
Well-bred young ladies do not brain people.
All right, you do it.
Listen, fellow. I am lady-in-waiting to the Princess Catherine.
Really? What are you waiting for? Though I think I could probably guess. Left it a bit late, haven't you?
Look here!
Where?
Lady Gertrude hung on to her self-control with an heroic effort, turned her back on the disguised prince, and glared at Sir Jasper.
You talk to him, Sir Ghost. Give him the full force of your personality. He deserves it.
Sir Jasper ambled forward, happy to be of service, and he and the prince studied each other with great interest.
And who or what might you be?
I'm Sir Jasper. I'm a ghost.
Been one long?
Who knows?
I thought ghosts only came out at night.
I never did have much sense of time. I'm always late.
Late?
Of course. I'm the late Sir Jasper.
I walked right into that one, didn't I?
Anything else you want to ask me?
Is it worth it?
Not really.
Then I think I'd like to speak to the princess again, please. If only because your entire existence makes my head ache.
Just doing my job.
Catherine came reluctantly forward again to take Sir Jasper's place. The script Richard had worked out in his head, full of fine insults and put-downs, had clearly gone right out the window. But as he couldn't see any way of retreating with honor, he carried on.
I'll have to have your particulars, Princess.
If you like, but I doubt they'll fit you.
For a moment, they actually smiled at each other. And that was when the Seneschal came bustling in.
Your Royal Highness, please forgive the delay. Your personal chambers are quite definitely ready and waiting. If you would just care to follow me...
And all the way through this soliloquy, the Seneschal kept shooting brief glances at the disguised prince. He clearly considered saying something, and then decided against it on the grounds that whatever question he asked, the answer was unlikely to be anything he wanted to hear. He bowed formally to Princess Catherine and Lady Gertrude.
Welcome to the Forest Kingdom. I'm sure you'll enjoy it here.
Don't put money on it.
She started out the open door, and the Seneschal and Lady Gertrude had to sprint after her to keep up. Sir Jasper ambled off after them, then stopped at the door and glanced back, just in time to see Prince Richard peel off his false beard and scratch at his itchy chin.
Now that is a good trick. I used to be able to take off my whole head.
Sir Jasper?
The ghost shrugged at the prince and walked through the door, which had swung shut while he was talking. Prince Richard considered the closed door.
Well... That didn't go as intended, in any number of ways. So that's Catherine. Beautiful, intelligent, doesn't take any nonsense from anyone. Not at all what I was expecting. It's not often I find someone who can keep up with me. I don't dislike her. Still not going to marry her, though, just on general principles. I did like a ghost. It seems some of the old stories about Castle Midnight are true after all. She must have made an impression on me. She's got me talking to myself.
The Seneschal hadn't led his distinguished guests far into the castle before the First Minister and the leader of the loyal opposition turned up, hurrying forward to greet their royal guest with many bowed heads and formal smiles. Word had reached them of raised voices and even a threat to leave, and they were both ready to say or do, or at the very least promise to do, whatever it took to persuade the princess to stay.
Well?
Yes, of course. Your Royal Highness, this is Peregrine de Woodville, First Minister of the Forest Kingdom Parliament. I'm sorry, I didn't see you, Mr. Wallace, standing in the First Minister's shadow. Your Highness, this is Henry Wallace, leader of the Loyal Opposition in Parliament.
Your Highness, I hope everything has been to your satisfaction. I heard some rumblings of your wanting to leave us. I hope nothing's wrong.
Yes, I did consider leaving, given the way I was treated by that awful servant. But I have been persuaded that it is my duty to stay. Do not give me cause to reconsider, because I feel it is also my duty to make it very clear that not even the whole forest army could stop me if I should decide to return home.
Of course, of course.
Peregrine smiled till his cheeks ached and quietly contemplated the quickest way of sneaking a powerful sedative into her food.
I assure you, the servant in question will be found and disciplined, and every effort will be made to make you welcome and comfortable in Forest Castle. Oh, and look, here comes Prince Richard himself to bid you welcome, at last.
It was a sign of how thrown the First Minister was that he actually saw Prince Richard's arrival as a good thing. Henry Wallace readied himself to jump in and, if need be, talk right over the prince if he said anything unsuitable. But Richard was now dressed in his best formal attire, having used a side route to get ahead of them.
Princess Catherine, so pleased to meet you. I'm sorry I wasn't there to greet you at the gate. Affairs of state, I'm afraid. But of course you understand. You are more beautiful than I would have dreamed possible. Welcome to our home.
He bowed to Catherine and Gertrude and nodded cheerfully to Sir Jasper. Catherine's scowl slowly smoothed out as she got her first look at her intended. Richard was tall and handsome, gracious and stately, and seemed to know how to address a princess properly, which was something. It never even occurred to Catherine to associate the polite prince with the very rude servant. And why should it? Princes disguised themselves as the lower orders only in bad romantic novels.
Thank you, Prince Richard. Think nothing of it. I am so glad to meet you. Your home is quite lovely.
Lady Gertrude wasn't so sure, but she didn't want to make a fuss and cause a scene just when everything was seemingly going so well. So she held her peace and went along. And everyone else was just relieved that Richard and Catherine were actually talking to each other instead of throwing things. Sir Jasper recognized Richard immediately and smiled and waved cheerfully at him.
Hello again, young man.
Richard pretended not to notice. Peregrine and Henry had only just realized there was a third person in the Red Heart party and considered Sir Jasper with growing alarm. Finally, Peregrine put his hand up like a child in a classroom to get Princess Catherine's attention.
Excuse me, Princess Catherine, but...
Yes, he's a ghost, and he's with me. Want to make something of it?
Oh, no, no, Your Highness. No, I suppose every country has its own customs.
Even if no one thought to mention them to us.
Oh, I'm not from Red Heart. I'm bred and dead in the forest land, man and ghost. In fact, I'm almost sure I was a knight of the realm, and I have been to this castle before. Yes, very definitely. So much looks familiar.
He's not thinking of moving in, is he?
He's with me, until I say otherwise.
What could have been a very awkward moment was fortunately diffused by the arrival of the somber warrior. He'd changed out of his armor and replaced the steel helm with the famous chalk-white porcelain mask. He bowed formally, if stiffly, to Peregrine and Henry, and a little more deeply to Prince Richard.
The ghost is part of our official retinue. Didn't you get the note?
Peregrine and Henry gave up and nodded formally to Sir Jasper, who didn't even notice because he'd gotten bored with the whole proceeding and was concentrating on turning his glow up and down. Richard offered Catherine his arm.
May I have the honor of escorting Your Highness to her prepared chambers?
and Catherine surprised everyone, including herself, by slipping her arm through his and allowing him to lead her away. The Seneschal and Lady Gertrude followed after the two young people. And even exchanged an understanding glance as they followed their charges up the main stairway. It's never easy guiding young royals, especially when the royals know they don't have to be guided if they don't want to be. The Seneschal moved in beside Gertrude and murmured in her ear.
She's going to be trouble, isn't she?
Oh, you have no idea.
Sir Jasper and the somber warrior brought up the rear, maintaining a respectful distance from the royals and each other. Peregrine and Henry watched them all go.
Did you see that? The prince was nice to her. Nice? What the hell is he doing?
I think he's trying to confuse us to death.
Catherine's iron will softened even further as she took in the extended suite of rooms King Rufus had provided for her and Lady Gertrude. The Seneschal bustled from room to room, showing them where everything was and pointing out items of special interest with all the enthusiasm of a hotel porter anticipating a really generous tip. Richard stayed leaning in the main doorway, watching it all with a quiet smile, saying nothing. Every single room was unusually large and luxurious by Redheart standards, though Catherine was careful not to appear too impressed with anything. Gertrude was wild with enthusiasm over absolutely everything and didn't care who knew it. She loved the heavy antique pieces of furniture, any one of which would have sold for a king's ransom in Redheart, because King William tended to throw everything out long before it had a chance to become antique. She ran her hands caressingly over the dark, lacquered surfaces and got seriously sensual with some gold fittings.
Never mind where the carpets came from. Does the suite have proper plumbing?
Of course, Your Highness. A large bath with its own hot water boiler and all the latest conveniences.
Richard grinned from the doorway.
Imported all the way from the Southern Kingdoms. We may not be as fashion-conscious as Redheart, but we do like to keep up. Were you perhaps afraid you'd have to empty a chamber pot out of a window?
It was Lady Gertrude's turn to go red in the face.
You don't have gas lighting, though, do you?
We prefer light sources that aren't likely to run out suddenly.
He shared a quick grin with Catherine. He was genuinely surprised at how well they were getting on. He really wasn't used to people he could talk to as an equal. And then he realized Sir Jasper was standing very still in the middle of the room, his bare feet hovering just above the heavy carpeting, his brow creased in thought.
Is everything all right, Sir Ghost?
I don't know this room, this suite. Nothing here is familiar. I'd hoped seeing the inside of the castle might help restore my lost memories, but...
It's a big castle. Lots and lots of rooms. Even if you'd been here many times before, you wouldn't have seen all of them.
Yes. I think I might go for a little walk, a little wander around, if that's all right.
To everyone's surprise, the usually diffident ghost didn't wait for anyone's permission. He just walked through the nearest wall and was gone. Everyone relaxed just a little. Sir Jasper meant well, but he still wasn't an easy presence to have around.
You might be used to ghosts at Castle Midnight, but I would have to say he does take a lot of getting used to.
Catherine and Gertrude exchanged a glance, but said nothing.
Well, I think I'll leave you to get settled in. The Seneschal's people are bringing up your luggage. And of course you won't need to keep the somber warrior outside your door. Our guards are your guards now. We'll find the warrior a room of his own, just down the corridor. There is to be a welcoming banquet later this evening, in your honor. The Seneschal will see that you get plenty of warning.
Thank you. You may leave now.
See you there, Princess.
And he left. The Seneschal bowed and bobbed quickly and hurried after the prince.
Well!
He seems pleasant enough.
You positively encouraged him.
Handsome enough, I suppose.
Handsome is as handsome does.
I'm still not marrying him.
Princess!
I know. He's no Malcolm. My lovely Malcolm. Oh, but things could have been worse, I suppose.
Oh, they're all smiles and charm before the wedding. Wait till he doesn't have to be polite.
You're not about to give me a lecture on the secrets of the bedroom, are you? I know all about sex. Or at least I've read every book I could find on the subject. I could probably teach him a few tricks. Why are you looking at me like that?